Welcome to the Caltex Theater, a full hour of dramatic entertainment broadcast over a nationwide network of stations throughout Australia. The Caltex Theater is brought to you by Caltex Oil, marketers of over 1,000 outstanding petroleum products, in association with Caltex dealers and distributors everywhere. Tonight in the Caltex Theatre, you will hear a rib-tickling comedy, Both Ends Meet, the story of a witty review writer who, in a case of mixed identity, landed himself in as pretty a farce as ever he penned. In the starring roles of tonight's play, you will hear Melbourne artists Mary Disney and Robert Peach. Caltex Theatre presents Both Ends Meet, Act 1.
Oh, dear. Hello? Yes, this is Mr. Davenport's house. Mr. Tony Davenport? Yes. No, he's not in, but I know he's expected because I'm waiting to see him. And the cleaning woman said that... Yes, with pleasure. I'll make a note. Just a minute, a pencil. All right. Who? Well, this is an honor. I've had the pleasure of meeting you twice. But you wouldn't remember. It was a sort of business. So I didn't get the opportunity to say how much I enjoyed your performances on the stage. No, I'm not a friend of Mr. Davenport's. I'm just waiting for him. What? When I met you? Well, both times I was waiting at the stage door. Well, I am a fan, but actually, as I said, it was, you know, business. Well, I don't expect you want to talk about it. Actually, I was doing what I'm doing now, waiting with one of those annoying bits of paper about income tax, a writ. Yes, that's right. Hello? Hello? She's hung up. What a pleasant room this is. Opens right onto the garden. Oh, roses. I must see what species they are.
Rushing me off my feet, Margot. The filler will be ours, Liz. I get to know a punctual newspaper man.
Reporters are important, Tony. You need all the publicity you can get. And don't forget it's opening night tomorrow.
Heavens, it's not the first review I've written.
The first good one for 2 years. And if it's a success, we'll get...
We'll get married anyway. Look, he'll be here at any moment. You'd better pop up to your own flat.
Oh, what on earth?
Well, we don't want him to think things. Actress in writer's flat,
etc. Oh, really, Tony?
Congratulations. You have an absolutely perfect maiden's flush.
I've what?
Your roses. Your cleaning woman let me in to wait for you. I hope you don't mind.
Mind? Of course not. You know Miss Ross? Margot Ross? Excuse me a minute while I put these things in the kitchen. Have a drink.
Oh, I don't think...
Of course you will. Margot, the Napoleon brandy.
I never touch it. It's far too expensive.
Expense? What does that matter? It all comes off the income tax. Entertainment allowance. Lovely.
Large one?
Thanks, no.
Oh, perhaps a whiskey or a gin?
Thanks, no. Not while I'm working.
I suppose you have to be careful, people offering you drinks all day.
I can't say they do.
Oh, come now, all the ones I've met.
You've had some of my colleagues to see you?
Of course, lots of them.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Why? They've always been most charming.
Just because our job's unpleasant, it doesn't mean we're unpleasant.
I wouldn't have thought newspaper work unpleasant.
But I'm not a reporter.
Oh, how stupid. Tony expected a reporter, and we thought you were he. And what can he do for you?
Pay his income tax.
What?
I'm sorry, this is most embarrassing, but I have a writ for him in my pocket.
Oh, bang goes the wedding.
Well, here we are. Looky, looky, champagne, Krug 45. Aunt Sophie sent me a case of it. It'll be the last one, though. Poor old dear died last week in Switzerland. Oh, Margot, you haven't given the press a drink.
I couldn't find the hemlock.
Hmm? Oh, that's Margot always joking.
I don't think so, Mr. Davenport.
Oh, but you must let me give you something. Anything.
You don't know what you're saying, darling.
Hmm? Oh, yes, I do. Now, what do you have?
£1,022.10, to be exact.
Oh, what a lovely line. £1,022.10. I must use that.
You've already used it.
I'm Wilson, income tax inspector.
Oh, no.
And this is a writ for the amount.
But I paid my tax.
2 years ago.
How much did you say, Mr. Wilson?
£1,022.10.
But this is terrible.
It's a distasteful business. I dislike it as much as you do.
Well, surely I should have had some warning. You could have seen my accountant.
I saw him yesterday. He told me you were abroad, in Venice.
And you didn't believe him?
Should I have? Well,
What happens now?
Mr. Davenport just settles up and everyone's happy.
Except Mr. Davenport.
Mr. Wilson, can you accept a check?
Oh, yes.
Then everything's all right.
Margot!
Everything's all right.
Is it?
I'll just make it out for you and you can sign it.
All right, dear, if you say so.
I'm so glad we've got this nicely settled.
Sign it, Tony.
There you are, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, and goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Wilson, and do come again.
Margot, are you mad? Goodbye, Mr. Wilson.
Well, that got rid of him.
Margot, what about the check?
Next year's date. Such a silly mistake.
Oh, you darling. But he'll be back.
That's the way you'll go when he comes in the front. Uncle Tony, darling.
Clarissa, in here, dear.
Oh, it is good to see you. And Margot, darling.
Clarissa, have a good time.
Heavenly. Rome is fabulous. Why don't we live there?
Yes, why not? In the ruins.
Who was the odd man I bumped into as I came in?
Oh, he was just collecting money for some institution.
Yes, the Government Bloodsuckers Institution.
He looked a bit shady to me. I hope we didn't leave him alone with the silver.
Mr. Wilson didn't leave with anything of value.
Oh, good. I really must unpack. My things will be crushed to bits. Give me my news in a minute or two.
I think I'll telephone Jimmy.
What good is a solicitor now?
He's always full of bright ideas when you don't need them. Let's see what happens when you do. Hello? Oh, is Mr. Scott Cartwright there, please? Well, if he comes in or telephones, will you say Mr. Davenport would like to speak to him? Thank you very much. Goodbye. You know, Tony, I was thinking we could save quite a bit by letting my flat.
Hmm? But where are you going to live?
Darling, you're much too old to be so naive. Here, of course, nobody would mind.
Oh, no, nobody would mind. They think it very gay and jolly and great fun, but I love you.
Well?
Well? Well, among other things, that means I respect you. And you will admit it would be madness to rush into marriage when I haven't a bean.
Well, so what? We're going to be some time, and the only reason for not anticipating a happy moment before was Aunt Sophie and how shocked she'd be.
I know, but...
And that doesn't apply anymore.
I like to respect her memory.
Do you think she's left you anything? That huge house in Paris?
Well, that was years ago. She's been living in Switzerland for ages.
Well, then she must have been rich.
And I was her favorite nephew.
The favorite?
As a matter of fact, the only nephew. Oh, what we could do with £5,000 or £10,000.
Pay your income tax.
Income tax? How I hate that William Pitt.
Hate William Pitt?
Yes, he invented it. To pay for the wars with Napoleon. Then Sir Robert Peel revived it and also invented policemen to arrest you for not paying it.
Uncle Tony, Margot, I've got some wonderful news for you. I met the mostest man in Rome. He wants to marry me, and I said yes.
An Italian?
No, English. We came back together. His name's Edward Kinkerby. Just think, Mrs. Kinkerby. Isn't that wonderful?
You must love him.
No, just a moment. I don't know a thing about him.
Oh, don't be stuffy, Tony. He's Edward Kinkerby.
Well, after all, I am Clarissa's guardian as well as her uncle.
What does your Edward do, Clarissa?
Something to do with finance.
Finance? A banker?
An accountant, I think.
He sounds very nice.
Then I can marry him. He'll be around in a minute. He was just dropping his bags at his room in Ebury Street. This will be him now.
Oh, it might be Mr. Wilson. Tony doesn't want to see Mr. Wilson again.
I'll look at the legs through the letterbox.
Well, an accountant in the family.
Very, very useful.
Uncle Tony and Margot, this is Edward.
Well, how do you...
I hope you don't mind me barging in like this. It was Clarissa's idea.
No, not at all. Not at all. Delighted. Do sit down.
I hope it isn't too much of a surprise about Clarissa and me, Mr. Devonport. You are Mr. Devonport.
Oh, Clarissa never introduces people properly. Edward Kinkerby, that's right, isn't it?
Yes.
Tony Davenport, Clarissa's guardian uncle.
And Miss Margot Ross.
I have a flat upstairs.
Oh.
Completely self-contained.
Oh.
We're engaged. We're going to be married.
Oh, really? When?
Well, we haven't quite fixed the date.
I only hope we won't be too old to get to the church. I'll go and make some coffee.
Well, I expect you'd like to know something about me.
Oh, no, no hurry. Excuse me. Hello. Oh, hello. Just a minute. It's my accountant. Clarissa, wouldn't you like to show Edward the garden?
What for?
Not for anything. I just thought he might like to see the garden.
Come on, Edward. You're going to see the garden.
Hello? Hello? Are you there? Oh, there you are. I haven't what? Oh, some oversight, I'll see to it. Yes, I know. £1,022 No, not 700. 1,020. What? 700 on top of the 1,022. Super tax? What do you mean, super? Super what? Nothing super's happened to me for the past 4 years. Did I? When? 2 years ago. And that was super? Was it? But you can't expect me to remember things that happened 2 years ago. You know the trouble with those Inland Revenue boys? They live too much in the past. Yes, I've noted it. Thanks. Goodbye.
I must say your roses are doing well.
Well, I'm glad something's doing well. Income tax, super tax. How I hate those tax collectors. I'd like to take them by the throat one by one, and with schedules A, B, C, and D...
Tony, will you come and see the kitchen sink? It's choked.
Of course it's choked, like the rest of Britain, with rage, frustration, and income tax.
Well, let's get to work on the sink first.
I shall be delighted to join you in the kitchen, my love, where we can slowly but firmly put our heads in the oven.
Oh, don't worry, children. It's an electric oven.
Poor Uncle Tony. Anything to do with income tax sent him frantic.
Clarissa, dear, I want you to know that the few weeks I've known you have been the happiest in my life. I've dreaded saying anything to spoil it.
Nothing could, darling.
There's something I can't keep from you any longer.
You're not already married?
Of course, with 9 children.
Oh, darling, my heart nearly stopped.
No, it's nothing like that. It's about the office.
Yes, darling. You have an office at Westminster and you're an accountant.
I didn't say I was an accountant. I work for the Commissioners of Inland Revenue.
Oh, glory! Shut the door, quick! Well, this is worse than the 9 children. What are we going to do?
Well, look here, I'm in a good, respectable position, good salary.
Darling, the point is, how are we going to tell Uncle Tony?
Drop it in casually.
Oh, so simple, like saying, oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you, Edward is the public executioner. Why didn't you tell me before?
Well, I was afraid you'd think of me as just that, the public executioner.
I didn't say I thought you were.
But people do. It's awful. Fellows I was at school with avoid me. People point at me and mutter. Why, I'm a social pariah.
Don't be silly, darling. But obviously we can't tell Uncle Tony yet.
Oh, no. He'd throw me out of the place. We'll think up something later.
Now, Edward, can I offer you a drink or will you wait for the coffee?
I'll have coffee, thanks.
Right. So, you're an accountant. Interesting job. Enjoy it?
He's very fond of it.
Yes, I envy you. Every day thwarting those revenue boys, thinking up ways of doing them in the eye.
I must finish my unpacking.
Oh, can't I help?
No, I shan't be long. Oh, careful, Clarissa. You nearly caught the train.
Oh, sorry, Margot. I'm just going to finish my unpacking. Cream, Edward?
Please.
Edward, how did you and Clarissa meet?
In Rome, in the Forum. She asked me which was the temple of the Vestal Virgins.
How refreshingly original.
She's been training to be a nurse, you know.
We were worried she might marry a doctor. Oh, we've nothing against doctors, but it's the life.
Well, there are compensations. Doctors can make quite a bit on the side.
Oh? How do you mean?
Asking the cash down so he doesn't have to show it in his return.
Oh, no.
Well, it has been done, you know.
But the doctors are men of integrity.
Doctors are men. And men, even men of integrity, are being driven by impossible demands to do dark deeds.
But you know all about that in your business, Edward.
Well, not really.
Oh, you're just being tactful. But where does being honest get you? Look at me. I've declared every penny I've earned, every expense I've claimed has been legitimate. And what's the result? I'm in the gutter.
Well, everyone has a difficult time.
Difficult? In my profession, it's practically impossible. Look, can I say to Mr. Sylvester, he owns the theatres and puts on the shows, could I say, Mr. Sylvester, here are the review sketches, just leave a little something in cash on the desk. Could I do that?
Edward could tell you how to do it.
Do what?
Cheat, swindle. He must know all sorts of artful legal ways of getting out of paying.
If I may say so, I don't see how a swindle could be legal.
No. If I were to tell you a few things about Mr. Sylvester, you'd change your
Perhaps
mind.
Perhaps you'd better not tell me.
Mind you, the theatrical side's all above board. It's his other ventures.
Whatever he does, it can't be legal. There's the law and there's breaking the law. Don't you agree?
No. Life's always on the move and the law's always rigid. Nowadays, trying to conform to the law is much the same as trying to walk about in Tudor corsets.
Edward, what do you think is the best way of getting out of paying income tax? Now, take your time before you answer. You know, I have been told something about buying up bankrupt hat shops, but I don't know.
I do. You're not buying any bankrupt hat shops. A, you've nothing to buy them with. And B, the whole thing would go wrong and I'd finish up wearing all the bankrupt hats.
Well, it makes my blood boil. There's Sylvester getting away with murder. A chain of fish and chip shops all over Britain. Oh, very carefully in another name, of course. His name and profits carefully concealed.
I don't think
it's inland revenue halfwits, I'll never catch him.
Oh.
Not only fish and chip shops, the elegant Mr. Sylvester, who's seen dining in all the smartest places, controls a fleet of barrow boys. 100 barrows and no cash records.
Oh, really?
It's a fact. How do you think he runs a Rolls Royce, a Bentley, two other cars, houses in London and the country, a villa in France? Oh, I ask you.
Another thing. Perhaps this is news to you too, Tony. That secretary of his, the elderly woman with grey hair, that, if you please, is his mother.
His mother?
Every Friday she draws £20. Off the income tax it comes. Every Saturday she hands back to her darling boy £20 in cash. There's £1,000 a year free of tax to begin with.
Oh, not as much as that.
Well,
you see...
whatever it is.
Oh.
And you can be sure that's only one of his many dodges.
But that's a wonderful idea. Why didn't you tell me before? Margot, you're my new secretary. I'll pay you £500 a year. You see, Edward, I give her £10 a week and she gives it back. Now, what could be better than that?
I don't think I'm a very good person to ask, actually.
Well, you must admit it's simple.
Well, not really. She'd have to pay on that 500.
Typical. To pay tax on £500 I don't even get.
Edward, come on. Give me some helpful advice.
You really want me to?
Yes.
Well, here it is. Pay up and smile.
Is that the advice you give your clients?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Are you doing well?
Yes.
Amazing.
After all, the country is going through difficult financial times. We're not out of the wood yet.
Well, why come out? I like the wood. It's nice and shady.
Full of nice, shady people.
Oh, you don't mean that. Of course, men like this Mr. Sylvester should be looked into, but well, on the whole, people are pretty honest, you know.
Honest? The law won't allow you to be honest. Now, look at us. Margot would love a big church wedding to walk down the aisle wearing a lovely white wedding dress and... Two pages?
Not pages, Tony. Pages are always disaster. They either stand on the bride's train or lift it so high the guests think they're at the Folies Bergère. We won't have pages.
We won't even have guests.
What?
Well, you know perfectly well we couldn't be married publicly.
What do you mean?
Edward, Margot and I are both wage earners. Now, if we marry, our incomes are added together and we're taxed even higher. Isn't that true?
Oh, yes.
See, Margot. But I've had an idea. I ran into a man I know the other day. He's now in the Merchant Navy, in a little coaling ship that sails all round Britain. But that isn't all. He's the captain. Now, he can marry us without anyone knowing. Now, here's my idea. We embark at Tilbury at night. We sail for Newcastle on Tyne. And somewhere in the North Sea, between Tilbury and Newcastle, we are married. Nobody knows. You can move in and live here, and though the world may think what it will, we four will secretly know we're a respectable married couple. Of course, nobody must ever be told. If you're ever questioned, you must just say that we are simply very good friends.
Oh, no. No. Now you've reached the peaks of madness.
Well, the laws are mad, not me. To evade mad laws, one must do mad things.
I am a woman. I want to be married in church, wearing white. You say no. Because of the laws, that's to be given up. You are not going to wait in a morning coat for me to come down the aisle in white satin. No. In a coaling ship, somewhere off Clacton-on-Sea, you and I are to be brought before the captain on stretchers.
Why on stretchers?
Because we're in the North Sea and are both, if you remember, very poor sailors. There, in front of the captain, we two, miserable, seasick, and presumably covered in coal dust, are to be united forever in a furtive secret, unmet since the marriage of Mary Queen of Scots and Lord Darnley.
But, Margot...
No, you can forget that. Definitely no.
Well, I was only trying to see...
Margot!
It might be Mr. Wilson.
Clarissa will answer it. She knows.
Jimmy Scott Cartwright, come in.
How's things, Clarissa? Hello, Margot. Hello, Tony.
Well, Jimmy, I didn't mean you to come all this way.
Oh, it's all right. I was in the neighborhood fixing up a nice, lucrative divorce. I telephoned the office and they gave me your message.
Oh, Mr. Kinkerby, a friend of Clarissa's, Mr. Scott Cartwright.
How do you do?
How are you?
Oh, sit down, Jimmy. This is all to do with finance, which is the reason why Tony wants to see you. Edward, what is your room in Ivory Street like?
Well, it's a room.
Margot means, is it nice? No, Margot, it's a bit on the dingy side.
Well, here's my idea. Tony has this house on a very long lease. I have the first floor flat. Clarissa has two rooms on the second. Now, unfortunately, Tony's old stick-in-the-mud accountant insists on including the rent I pay as part of Tony's income.
Yes, well, of course, that's perfectly correct.
Correct it may be, but perfect it is not.
Oh, no, indeed. Now, I'm a solicitor, Mr. Kinkerby, so I do know what I'm talking about. Now, the thing to do with a house like this is to let off every bit of it you don't need to friends. Friends who just quietly pay cash and no questions asked. Mary and I have been doing it for years.
Have you?
Oh, years. See, it's all right to talk, isn't it?
Oh, yes, of course. We're all friends. Edward's an accountant.
Then I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Oh. Why, Tony, how do you think we managed to run the Bentley?
Edward, how much do you pay for your room?
4 guineas.
Fine. Tony, we'll convert the attic floor. Edward, you now have a charming little flat, and Tony gets 4 guineas a week free of income tax.
We're saved. Edward, you'd better move in at once.
I'm afraid it wouldn't be possible. It's very kind of you, but I think I'd better stay where I am.
But you'll have a proper flat, a nice one.
I really am most grateful, but, well, I couldn't.
Look, if it's the legal side that's bothering you, do let me assure you that it's all perfectly all right. Scott Cartwright and Phillips are a most upright and old established firm of solicitors. We wouldn't go in for anything in which... in which there was a chance of...
being found out?
Exactly. Hmm. And I assure you, my partner, old Phillips, is doing much better than I am at this letting racket. He's got a huge house just near here. Absolutely packed with friends.
Well, let's think about it.
But what's there to think about?
Edward, you agree there's nothing wrong in diddling the income tax people.
I don't agree at all.
Edward, let's talk about it later.
But you mean you think I'm wrong in offering you the flat?
Since you ask.
Edward.
Since you ask, yes, I do. You'd get into the most serious trouble if you were found out.
But it couldn't be found out if by any chance any questions are asked. You're just a friend. But in point of fact, that'll never come up, because the tax people will never know, believe me.
I don't believe you.
I beg your pardon?
I said I don't believe you.
Edward!
Clarissa, I don't think your Mr. Kinkerby is very polite, is he? I offered him a flat free of income tax.
Look here, Kinkerby, you say you don't believe
me. I don't.
Edward, let's go for a walk.
You don't believe me in spite of the fact that I've been successfully operating this racket for years, making nearly 600 a year out of it.
How much?
600. And the poor old tax collector hasn't the least idea, not a clue. And you don't believe me.
I expect Edward thinks we're trying to palm off something rather nasty. The attic doesn't sound very attractive, but Edward, I know when you see it.
It isn't that at all. I'm sure it's very nice, but well, I can't have anything to do with an illegal arrangement.
Can't you?
No.
I don't know about you, Clarissa, but I'm beginning to have grave doubts about Mr. Kinkerby.
Well, I have no doubts whatever.
You have grave doubts about me just because I won't break the law. Well, let me tell you...
Let me tell you that I do not like being shouted.
I am not shouting. I'm simply trying to tell you...
Grave doubts is what I said. Now, you want to marry Clarissa. I'm her guardian, and I wanted to marry a man who's likely to get somewhere. It seems to me that an accountant in the modern financial world...
But I am not an accountant.
And why did you say you were?
He didn't. I did. I misunderstood.
Well, Edward, what do you do?
Please don't let's go into that now.
I'm sorry, but I'd rather get things straight.
No.
What's the mystery? Are you in something disreputable?
Not in the least. Quite the reverse.
Edward, dear, listen to me.
Be quiet, Clarissa.
What?
Be quiet.
Oh, full of old world charm.
But really, you arrive at my house for the first time. You shout at me. You insult my niece. I hope this will be a lesson to you, Clarissa, to think twice before picking up strange young men when you're abroad. Because I can assure you I'd think a great many times before agreeing to your engagement to Mr. Kinkerby.
That's unfair.
I don't like his manners, and I wish he'd now go away.
I shall be glad to.
Oh, Edward! Edward!
Oh, I should just let him go, darling. He's a very ill-bred young man.
He isn't. It's not his fault. You put him in a terrible position.
I put him in a terrible position? What are you talking about?
It was so embarrassing for him.
What was?
It's not his fault. I thought he was an accountant.
Nobody said it was, darling, but you must agree.
I don't agree. It's his work.
Look, perhaps you'd explain.
What is his work?
What does he do?
He works in an office.
Go on, he works in an office.
In an office of the Commissioners of Inland Revenue.
What?
The Commissioners of Inland Revenue.
You mean he's one of them?
Yes.
And you brought him here, right into the bosom of your family?
But I didn't know.
And we treated him just like one of us.
Oh, an income tax official as a nephew-in-law. I'd never have been able to raise my head again.
Tony, and I told him about my 600 a year from lettings.
But heavens, I tried to let him a flat on the side.
I told him about Sylvester, the fish and chip shops.
Phillips and his letting racket.
The Barrows.
And Sylvester's mother.
Oh, Clarissa. Clarissa. You've got to get him back.
Edward?
You've got to get him back.
If I do get him back, can I marry him?
What do you mean, can you marry him? You've got to marry him.
And so the curtain falls on Act One of tonight's Caltex Theater play, Both Ends Meet.
Next time you fill your tank with gasoline, fill up with new power, new performance, new economy. Fill up with Caltex Butane Boosted Gasoline. That's the gasoline made to take better care of your car's performance. Designed for today's faster pace. Caltex Butane Boosted Gasoline at the sign of the Caltex Star, where we take better care of your car.
The Caltex Theater now presents Mary Disney and Robert Peach in Both Ends Meet. Act Two.
What time is it, Margot?
Oh, nearly 3 o'clock.
Do you think Clarissa's found Edward, but he won't come? Why should he come back? We all insulted him.
What are we going to do? We still haven't worked out any proper plan of campaign.
We shall have to emigrate, Tony. America.
That's it?
The land of the free.
Is it?
Well, isn't it? The first thing you see is the Statue of Liberty.
Yes. The next thing's Ellis Island. A friend of mine was very successful as an Indian fakir. When his creditors finally caught him somewhere near Calcutta and asked him when he was going to pay up, he smiled sweetly and put his finger to his lips. He'd taken a vow of silence. But Jimmy, what are we going to say to him?
Say to who?
To Edward.
I'm wondering what I'm going to say to old Phillips.
But old Phillips doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. After all I told your chum about him?
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter now.
Have you ever seen old Phillips? Silver hair, skin like parchment, always wears a stock. The most respectable old man in the city.
Well, as it turns out, he's not all that respectable, is he? So a spell in Dartmoor will do him good. Put some color into those parchment cheeks.
Oh, don't.
Well, you'll probably be in the dock with him. Don't worry. He'll engage the best counsel in Britain.
That's what worries me. The best counsel, the only man for the job, wouldn't touch it.
Why not?
Well, I've good reason to suppose he's operating the room-letting racket himself.
You know, from a nation of shopkeepers, we seem to have turned into a hive of landladies.
Will you two stop panicking?
I told him twice about my 600 a year. How can I tell Mary life is nicer without a Bentley? Later, we were going to sell it and send young Jimmy to Cambridge to read law. No chance of that now.
Probably just as well. You wouldn't like to think of young Jimmy turning to Chapter 5 and reading all about Dad in the case of the Crown versus James Scott Cartwright.
Tony, you and I haven't done anything wrong.
Oh, no, no. We're only informants about Sylvester. I also asked him point blank the best way to get out of paying income tax. Look, I spent at least 10 years running through life with the commissioners after me like a pack of wolves. Now they'll be all round me snarling and baring their teeth. Oh. Hello. Geneva. Yes, I'll hold the line.
Oh, Tony, Aunt Sophie's left you something. I told you so.
Yes, with my luck, it'll be nothing but debts.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. Didn't she send you a case of champagne?
Yes.
Now she's probably died and left me the account.
Don't commit yourself. Commit yourself.
Hello? Oh. Allô, j'écoute. Je ne quitte pas. Allô? Non, Monsieur Davenport n'est pas là. Il est parti.
What did you say, Jimmy?
He said he's gone out.
But I want to know what it's about.
Tell them to get onto the office. They can deal with it.
Yeah, good idea. Écoutez, voulez-vous téléphoner numéro... what is it, Jimmy?
City 1111.
Cité, Oh, heavens, now she's talking German. Haben Sie gut... Oh, are you English? Oh, beg your pardon. Now, will you put this call through to City 1111? Ask for Mr. Phillips. Thank you.
Oh, really, Tony? How ridiculous.
I don't think so. Look, once they got hold of me...
Come on, steady on, you two. If it was anything important, Tony would have heard of it days ago. That was probably to tell him of some small bequest.
You can't know that.
Pardon me, but I can. You'll find she's left you possibly a few books or some linen or perhaps some small piece of china.
China?
Of course, there may be funeral expenses.
Jimmy, couldn't it possibly be something exciting?
I'm afraid not.
Oh, well. Tony, what was Aunt Sophie like?
Well, I only met her once. I was still at school. My father took me to see her in Paris. I remember her as a magical sort of person. Very beautiful, very gentle. She had the most graceful manners. I loved her. I remember the Duchesse de Guermont had been to tea with her the day before. It all sounded too wonderful for words.
Well, I must be getting back to my office. I'll keep in touch.
It's all right, Jimmy. Thanks for coming round.
I'm sorry I did. No, don't get up. I left myself out. Bye-bye.
Bye, Jimmy. Oh, you never know, Tony. She might have left something.
You heard Jimmy. Probably china.
Well, old china can be valuable. I'll get it.
Remember, Mr. Wilson.
Of course. Mr. Davenport in?
Oh, well,
Could I see him? Treherne's the name. Sir George Treherne.
Oh, do come in. Tony, Sir George Treherne. Sir George, Mr. Davenport.
Good evening. I hope you'll forgive this intrusion.
Yes?
I'm an old friend of your Aunt Sophie.
Oh, how nice.
Dear Sophie. Radiant. Unforgettable. Yes, I was greatly saddened to hear the news. I had occasion to telephone Geneva. I spoke to her solicitors. What's their name?
I'm afraid I don't know.
Oh, haven't they been in touch with you?
No, not personally.
Then you don't know the terms of the will?
Oh, is there some trouble?
Oh, no. Good heavens, no. It's just that dear Sophie has been kind enough to mention me. How does she put it? I trust my nephew will give to my old friend, Sir George Treherne, some remembrance of young, happy days.
Oh, well, of course, Sir George. I'll only be too pleased.
Tony will find you something personal of hers. Some books.
Or a piece of china.
I don't think that's quite what she meant.
Well, you must tell us quite frankly exactly what you would like.
Oh, how kind you are. I have come here on a delicate mission.
Delicate mission, Sir George?
A delicate mission, that's what we used to call it. I was in the diplomatic service at Tashi in Paris and so on. That's where I first met Sophie. She was living in a most unpleasant little flat. Shortly afterwards, she moved to a delightful house just off the Champs-Élysées.
What happened between the unpleasant flat and the delightful house?
Sophie and I met on the stairs of the embassy at a reception.
Yes?
That's all.
it hardly explains the move, does it? One's fortunes don't change just because you meet someone on a staircase.
Depends who you meet. I was an extremely wealthy young man.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, don't misunderstand me. We fell head over heels in love.
And you set her up in the delightful house?
Naturally.
The whole thing was done openly?
The whole thing was done quietly. I was in the diplomatic.
And just what is your delicate mission on this occasion?
I once gave Sophie a little something. I can't conceal from you that it would be nice if you... how shall I put it?
Returned a little something?
Precisely.
How much was it?
£10,000.
Good heavens! Excuse me. Hello? Oh, hello, Jimmy. Aunt Sophie? Yes. How much? Oh, Jimmy, this is no time for joking. Seriously? £120,000. Good Lord. What's that? No snags. That's what you think. Thank you for ringing. Goodbye.
I couldn't help but overhear. You're a very fortunate young man.
But I don't understand it. If you only gave Aunt Sophie 10,000, where did the other 110 come from?
Well, I think it's plain that she did invest her money wisely. She had a great friend on the Paris Bourse, another who was a banker, another in the champagne business. They would have given her excellent advice.
Nothing more? No more 10,000s?
Oh, good heavens, no. I was the only man your aunt ever cared tuppence for.
Oh, now who on earth can that be?
I'll answer it.
This place has been like Victoria Station, eh?
Mr. Davenport.
Well,
I'm an old friend of his aunt, Lord Minister.
Oh, come in.
Thank you.
Another old friend of Aunt Sophie's, Lord Minster. Mr. Davenport.
Well, forgive my intruding, Davenport, but I was nearby. Why, George Brown.
Dickie.
I'd no idea you were in London. Such sad news about Sophie. We all knew one another in Paris, Davenport, at the embassy. Good old George, a few years older, but still able to get about her.
Really, Dickie, that juvenile manner of yours ill becomes a man well over 60.
Well, I'm sorry, George, but I just grow younger every year.
You're going to be most embarrassing at 80.
Grumpy as ever. Come and dine with me.
I'm dining at Vicky Holland's.
Well, so am I. I'll give you a lift. I felt I had to stop by and say hello to Sophie's nephew. I say, Davenport, I'd no idea she had so much money. Where did she get it?
Well, early in life, she made a very good investment.
On the market?
On a staircase.
Well, I'll drop in tomorrow, Mr. Davenport. Come along, Dickie, if you're giving me a lift.
Nice to have met you, Davenport. I wonder if I could see you tomorrow. I didn't expect to find him here. It's just a very small financial matter. A little gift I once made Sophie.
How much?
5,000.
Come along, Dickie.
Just come in, my dear fellow. Tomorrow morning.
Bye, Lord
Minster. Cheerio, dear.
Well...
10,000? 5,000. Presumably she met Lord Minster during the sales.
Tony, whatever happens, don't let it worry you.
Worry me? Do you realize, Margaret, there's 15,000 gone in 10 minutes? And what about the rest, all the other gentlemen?
We don't know there were any others. Sir George said he was the only man in her life.
He said the only man she cared tuppence for. There are a lot of tuppences in 120,000. A friend on the Bourse, another who was a banker, another who was in the champagne business, and that's only Paris. There are plenty more cities in Europe, and Aunt Sophie was a great traveler.
Tony, you must keep calm.
Calm? How can I keep calm? Do you think it's nice to be told your gracious, charming aunt was, in point of fact, a sort of Madame Zaza? Oh,
really, Tony? You built a sentimental picture of a gracious woman sitting around in her salon like a sort of Whistler's aunt, with her silver, her porcelain, her objet de vertu.
Objet de easy vertu.
And you're furious to find that far from being anything like your picture, Aunt Sophie actually had a life that was full of interest and intrigue.
Well, I'm not criticizing her. One would expect a lady as beautiful as Aunt Sophie to create a lot of interest. But I don't feel I can bring myself to profit from the intrigue.
Why not?
Well, would you?
Like a shot. And what about Sir George and Lord Minster?
Well, if they want it, there's a moral obligation, isn't there? It was theirs, it is theirs. Well, surely you can see in the circumstances it's only right and proper.
I can imagine no circumstances in which it's right and proper for dissatisfied customers to return 30 years later and ask for their money back.
You know, Margot, I think you're right.
You can't be under a moral obligation to men like that.
You are right, absolutely right. They shan't have a penny, not a penny.
And you're going to accept the money, aren't you?
Well, I...
There's £1,022.10 income tax and super tax of £700 owing.
Oh, Lord, I'd forgotten that. I've got to accept the money.
Hello, darling.
Clarissa, did you find Edward?
He's in the hall.
Well, bring him in. Come in, my dear fellow.
Well, I wasn't sure.
Oh,
that...
I hope you didn't take too much notice of what I said before. I was a bit out of sorts. Oh.
Well, he's done it.
Done what?
I've thrown up my job. Pension and all.
Well... That was a bit sudden, wasn't it?
Well, I was in the most awful fix, you know. I'd heard a lot of things I shouldn't have heard. Oh, I know I should have spoken up and told you about myself.
Oh, my dear Edward, we absolutely understand why you didn't. But what happened?
Well, from here I went to the office and made a few notes in my personal file.
Notes?
Yes, about Phillips and Sylvester. Our department handles their assessments.
Oh.
I left my office to see if I had any personal mail, and when I returned, my file was missing. I went into Murgatroyd's office. He's my boss. I mean, he was my boss. And there was my private file open in front of him.
What?
Oh, he couldn't make anything of my notes, but I was very indignant. Snooping's all very well, but not within the office.
Edward, tell them the romantic part.
Oh, it's not really. Well, Mr. Devonport, I felt I couldn't go on loving Clarissa and betray you and your friends.
There, isn't that sweet?
And if I wasn't prepared to be a Judas, I was no good to the department. So I gave in my resignation.
He's a different person.
I feel terrific. Free.
Oh, it's wonderful news, Edward. And we have wonderful news too, Clarissa. Aunt Sophie has left Tony £120,000.
Oh, no! Why, it's fabulous.
Oh, I say, that makes it worse. An heiress and a jobless fiancé.
Wait a minute, darling. You said you'd like to be an accountant.
Oh, but that takes ages, darling.
But it's what you'd really like. So, Uncle Tony, would you finance Edward during whatever period...
Oh, I say, just a minute.
But that's a wonderful idea, don't you agree, Margot? Eventually, we would have a financial advisor in the family. And one who understands the ins and outs of those curious minds.
Well, I'm tremendously grateful to you, sir, for making it possible.
After all, it is through me you gave up your job.
Come on, Edward. You're taking me to dinner to celebrate.
And I think we'll do the same, Margot.
No, Tony, darling. You and I are going to sit and make lists of all the lovely things we're going to buy. More coffee, Tony?
Yes, please, my dear. Oh, that'll be Jimmy. I asked him to come early this morning before the nobility arrived. I let him in. Jimmy and Edward, my dear.
Yes, they've been on the doorstep, you know.
I must say, gave me quite a turn until I remembered you were on our side. Edward, let me congratulate you.
Oh, thanks. How did you know?
Well, Tony phoned me last night with all the news. Any sign of them yet, Tony?
Not yet.
Where's Clarissa, Margot?
Your celebration dinner, young man, apparently lasted until 5 a.m. in some nightclub.
Oh, well, we did make quite a night of it, actually.
Well, she's got to get some sleep or you'll be marrying an old hag.
Oh, this will be one of them now.
I'll answer it.
Jimmy, if there's any argument, you'll back me up, won't you?
Of course, not a penny.
Oh, good morning. Well, I just thought I'd look in at... Oh.
The whole thing has been discussed quite openly, so I assure you there's nothing to be embarrassed about.
Oh, well, in that case, you're quite right, of course. The only real embarrassment was walking in here last night and finding George. Well, after all these years, it'd be a shame if he found out about myself and Sophie.
Lord Minster, I am Mr. Davenport's solicitor. Have you any proof about this £5,000?
Oh, my dear fellow, you're not going to drag this into court.
Well, if you...
Well, funnily enough, I kept a letter from her. My dear Toto, 5,000 thanks. You see, £5,000 was the sum I gave her for the enchanting gift. I shall remain forever in your debt, Sophie. What 5,000 that you gave her?
Sir George, how did you...
A middle-aged person was admitting herself at the front door.
Oh, the Daily Woman. She's arrived. That's good.
You gave Sophie £5,000, Dickie. May I ask why? Surely you remember. I told you about it at the time. Had you told me about it at the time... You'd not be here to tell me about it now.
Don't be ridiculous. It was all perfectly innocent.
Ah, you were the man in the cupboard.
Man in the cupboard?
In 1916. I came back to Paris on leave unexpectedly. I called upon Sophie, was kept waiting, then shown into her bedroom, where she was lying on a chaise longue in an elaborate toilette with a noticeably heightened color.
Well?
She told me that since my departure, her life had been a desert. The morning's a wilderness, and nothing to look forward to in the evenings.
Well, I'm sure that was true.
Well, I ask you, Miss Ross, do ladies with nothing to look forward to in the evenings put on evening dress?
If anything, they take them off.
And on the floor, pushed out of the way, but still visible, was a British staff officer's cap.
That might have been anybody's, George.
It occurred to me at the time. Sophie knew many distinguished persons. One did not wish to fling open the door of the cupboard and disclose one's commanding general.
How did you know there was anyone in the cupboard?
Somebody sneezed.
In the cupboard?
Quite definitely.
But I've been in this scores of times.
In it?
In repertory companies. It's traditional. The maid dashes in and says, your lover has returned unexpectedly, so you push your new lover into the cupboard and... Tell me, Lord Minster, was there anyone else in the cupboard?
Oh, not a soul.
There! He admits it. He admits being in the cupboard.
Well, I... Oh, At this stage in our lives, what's the point of denying it? It was just a joke.
A joke? I said nothing to Sophie at the time because I couldn't bear to see her humiliated. You, of all people. And how many more were there like you, I asked myself.
We all ask ourselves.
Perhaps you'll inform me when this minster person has left the premises. I shall wait in the garden.
Well, I'll calm him down. Sorry, I can never resist pulling his leg. I said, George, don't be such an old child.
You're going to have a tough time shaking them off.
Well, I don't see why.
No. Well, before you know where you are, they'll be saying that you tacitly admitted their claims. And with a couple like that, you'll be in a lawsuit before you can say knife.
I think we could get rid of them both for good, if it worked.
If what worked?
With Edward. You know what a panic we were in discovering we'd given away secrets right and left in front of an income tax official. They must have lots of secrets.
But I'm not an official anymore.
Edward, they don't know that.
We'd have to lead the conversation round to the subject of taxation.
Margot, I think you've got something. We shall need lots of champagne.
I'll get it.
Davenport, do you think you can stop this person badgering me?
Wouldn't you both like a drink?
Not for me.
Oh, yes, do. It can be such a help.
Champagne?
Well, personally, there's only one thing I'd like more than a glass of champagne.
What's that?
Two glasses.
Oh, how original.
You can't afford much of it nowadays.
The taxation, I suppose.
Ah.
You've hit the nail right on the head. Now, what I couldn't say about the income tax.
Really?
Of course, George is the one with the really bright idea.
Perhaps you'd be kind enough to...
George, stop being so crusty. Everyone I know admires the way you diddle the tax collector.
What do you mean?
You know, tax evasion.
Oh, really, Dickie?
Now, don't deny it. Who bought Marie Antoinette's desk and got away with charging it his office furniture? And not only a desk, but two armchairs and a magnificent mirror.
Well, one has to have a desk in one's office and a chair to sit on. And a glass for the wretched typist to look at herself in.
Yes, George, but one doesn't have to get in touch with the authorities at Versailles and have them over here buying everything back at an enormous capital gain to yourself.
Oh, these things become a little exaggerated.
Well, how you swung that one, I can't imagine. Sheer impudence, I suppose.
Like your brandy smuggling.
I don't know what you mean.
Got you on the raw there, eh, Dickie?
Well, now, George, there are certain things one doesn't say in public.
But it's no secret.
Some more champagne, Lordminster.
Thank you,
Sir George.
I will, yes.
Oh, tell us about the smuggling, Lordminster. It sounds so exciting.
Well, really, it's not really smuggling. I have some very good friends in Brittany, in the wine trade, and I have a small yacht which occasionally goes out and gets lost and has to put in at St. Malo or somewhere around there. Then it sets out again with a few bottles of brandy.
About 100 dozen.
And finds its way home.
In the dead of night.
That's all there is to it.
Apart from a handsome profit.
Oh, how romantic.
Mark, you idiot. It's just a bit of fun. One likes to feel one's still got some dash.
Oh, of course.
So one amuses oneself once in a while.
Tringham, he said, 1 a month.
Tringham?
You remember, Dickie, you had a butler called Trimmingham. For the last 2 years, he's been with me. Oh, well, we've had some most interesting talks about you.
Discussing me with a former servant. It amounts to spying.
Like hiding in cupboards.
Now, let me tell you, Trimmingham had better... Oh, you stopped the night at the Marsh about 4 years ago on your way to France. I suppose that's when you got hold of him, bribed him.
Bribed him?
Yes, George, with tales about what he could make out of those expensive teas you serve on the days you open your stately home to the public.
What the...
Yes, and I'm told that you take at least 4 times more in gate money than is ever revealed to the tax inspector.
That could be checked. There are admission tickets
here, but only one visitor in 4 seems to get one.
Who told you that?
Freddie Bradford.
Who?
The Duke of Bradford.
Duke of Bradford? But he's been invited to stay as a guest. Why should he pay 5 shillings to be herded round with the trippers?
Because he said it's less boring that way and you get a better tea.
No. Really? Well, if a few of the facts about the Duke of Bradford were known, He wouldn't be at liberty to go about snooping around other people's houses.
Quite true. Do you know Davenport? He lets his shoot in to wealthy Americans, gets dollars on the sly, and then asks them for 50% of the bag, which he sells on the quiet to a London hotel.
That's true.
Oh, I know it is, because he told me so himself. And that you'd put him up to it.
I put him up to it? Oh,
come off it, George. Everyone knows about your shoot. It's famous.
Where on earth do you hear these things?
Oh, just gossip.
It's high time they abolished the House of Lords.
And talking of profit, George, we won't mention the workmen's cottages on your estate. The tenants only pay 10 shillings a week on paper, but they all seem to have Rolls Royces. Might we just pause
and consider the east wing of your country house? Let to a Canadian family?
They're my guests.
And have been your guests for the last 7 years. Rather a long visit. Unless, of course, they're paying guests. I wonder if there's an account in a bank in Montreal. Not, of course, in the name of Lord Minster.
I've never been to Canada.
But you go to New York, where Canadian dollars are so useful.
George, I think you've said enough.
He has.
Edward! Oh, I've forgotten all about you. We shouldn't. You oughtn't to have... Oh, dear.
Well, what's the matter?
Edward, he's heard everything Sir George and Lord Minster have been saying.
Edward, you will treat everything you've heard as confidential, won't you?
Oh, I, the devil, shouldn't do.
Now, don't panic, Sir George. It'll be all right.
What do you mean, don't panic? I'm not panicking.
Going on.
Edward, if only you'd say something.
It has been a most interesting morning. Goodbye, everyone.
He's gone.
No, keep calm, Sir George.
I am calm.
We must keep our heads.
Now, will you explain yourselves? What is this, Edward, a policeman?
Much worse. Commissioners of Inland Revenue.
Oh. What? This is all your fault, Dickie.
Well, it was you who brought the subject up.
My office furniture. The workmen's cottages.
Well, my Canadians, and announcing that I import hundreds of dozens of cases of brandy. Oh, we've got to think quickly, or we'll have the tax people down on us. Of course, I know your financial skies are rosy.
Not so rosy now you filled them with vultures.
If a lot of officials started prying into my affairs, I think I'd shoot myself. What would you do, Torch?
I'd shoot the officials.
I think I can get you out of this trouble, if in return you'll do something for me.
Oh, anything.
Of course, dear fellow.
Now, that young man's going to marry Mr. Davenport's niece. And if he feels morally obligated not to remember the unfortunate things you both quite accidentally revealed, Mr. Davenport might feel morally obliged to support his future nephew. So, don't you agree you'd be wiser to forget your claim?
I'm prepared to waive any claim if you can assure me that our indiscretions are forgotten.
And you, Lord Minster?
Oh, yes, of course.
Then may I have the letters?
Oh.
Thank you. I can assure you that everything will be all right.
Well, I hope you won't mind if I run along.
Oh, not at all, Lord Minster.
I must be going, too. Can you give me a lift, Dickie?
Well, of course, George. Goodbye.
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 I'll see you to the door.
Well, we got out of that.
I'm off too, Tony.
Oh, Master Jimmy. Well, thanks for your help.
I'd bill you, but I don't know how to charge for nervous wear and tear.
Cheerio.
Oh, look who's arrived, Mr. Wilson.
I'm so sorry having to come back like this. It's just that you made a little mistake.
With the date, I know.
It wasn't really a business call. I read about your good fortune in the papers. Congratulations. I suppose you're going to get married now.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. Mr. Wilson, isn't it true with a joint income and all this extra money, it's almost impossible?
You mean yesterday you were too poor to get married, and today you're too rich?
Yes.
Now, listen, if you
Darling, think... don't get overexcited.
You never wanted to marry me. Why weren't you honest? Why didn't you explain what you really wanted was an unpaid cook housekeeper?
I'm only thinking what's best for both of us.
I wouldn't marry you.
No, you don't mean that. You may seem worse off when you work it out on paper, but there's a lot more to money than mathematics. You go ahead and get married. I can tell you lots of little ways and means of getting along. Don't invest the money. Use it as capital. Buy a country place. Claim on this house as an office. Buy a farm. Make yourself into a company or a series of companies. There's 101 lovely little dodgers I could put you up to.
Mr. Wilson, you're the man I've been looking for.
20 years with income tax, you get to know a thing or two.
Oh, Tony, you wanted a financial genius.
Yes.
You found him.
Mr. Wilson, I only wish there was something we could do for you in return.
Well, there's really nothing I want. The only thing I really want is a flat, and no one can find that.
A flat? Tony, the attic flat.
Two rooms, kitchen and bath?
You don't mean it.
We do mean it.
I couldn't afford much.
That doesn't matter.
But what I could afford...
Yes?
You'd get free of income tax.
It's a deal.
We'll drink to it.
Oh. Hello? Oh, no. It's not possible.
What is it?
The Inland Revenue. The Inland Revenue want to speak to me about death duties.
I'll deal with them.
What?
I know that department. I'll fix them.
Hello. My financial advisor will ring you in the morning. Margot? To our new financial advisor.
We drink to you.
We drink to everyone. Edward and Clarissa.
Sir George and Lord Minster.
Aunt Sophie.
And, of course,
the Commissioners of Inland Revenue.
So ends our Caltex play, Both Ends Meet. In a moment, we will give you tonight's cast. Both Ends Meet was written by Arthur McRae and adapted for radio by Martin Curry. In the starring roles, you heard Mary Disney as Margot Ross and Robert Peach as Tony Davenport. The supporting cast was as follows. Clarissa, Bernadette Russell, Edward Kinkerby, Noel Ferrier, Mr. Wilson, John Morgan, Jimmy Scott Cartwright, John Edmund, Sir George Traherne, Williams Lloyd, Lord Minster, Douglas Kelly. Now this is your compere, Rick Hutton, inviting you to be listening next week for another outstanding production in the Caltex Theater, and saying good night on behalf of your hosts, Caltex Oil, marketers of Caltex Super Gasoline and Caltex Gasoline, the world-famous RPM 1030 Special Motor Oil, and Marfac Lubrication.